Hey, I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go, right? There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. On NPR's new podcast, Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's part existential deep dive and part game show. I ask actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to ask some of life's biggest questions. Listen to NPR's Wildcard on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast, and I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Welcome to Time Out. I'm Eve Rodsky, author of the New York Times bestseller Fair Play and Find Your Unicorn Space, activist on the Gender Division of Labor, attorney, and family mediator.
And I'm Dr. Aditi Narukar, a physician and medical correspondent with an expertise in the science of stress, resilience, mental health, and burnout.
We're here to peel back the layers around why it's so easy for society to guard men's time as if it's diamonds and to treat women's time as if it's infinite, like sand. And whether you are partnered with or without children or in a career where you want more boundaries, this is the place for you, for all family structures. We're here to take a time out to learn, get inspired, and most importantly, reclaim our time. Hi, Aditi.
Hi, Eve.
I get to be on your time zone today as we're recording, so it just feels fun to be in the same time zone.
I love it. You feel even closer than you usually feel.
Well, I wanted to tell you a little bit about my journey to understanding goals. Because goals, I think, you know, sometimes we just set them out for ourselves, maybe based on other people's expectations. And I don't know if I always really thought about why I set goals or if I even knew what those goals are. I definitely didn't have a vision board in my third grade bedroom. I had like Teen Bop posters up there. But what's interesting about Find Your Unicorn Space was that in so many of my interviews with creative people, the word goals came up. And so I felt like it would be a disservice not to address them in a chapter in the book. Goal setting became very important to people living a creative life. That's, I think, the difference between unicorn space and a hobby. Not only the infrequency that a hobby connotes, but a unicorn space has goals. And a lot of people level up. As my son said to me when I was talking to him about goal setting, he said, yeah, duh, mom, because whether it's life or video games, no one wants to die on level one. So if we don't want to die on level one, I think we do have to set some goals. But how do we know they're the right goals? And so I wrote that down in a moleskin. How do I know that this is the right goal for me? Or how does somebody know it's the right goal? And I started to ask questions. And two things came up that felt totally contradictory to me. But you'll probably tell me from a brain science perspective why they're actually complementary and not contradictory. But in the beginning, it felt contradictory, which was, so many people, half, said to me that they followed some version of a big, hairy, audacious goal. I want to put people on the moon.
Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
That's why it's often called a moonshot, even though I really hate, I don't really like that word. It just sounds, I don't know, it sounds porn, like porn to me or something. And then often I'd also hear the opposite, which is, well, the way I got to where I am is I took extremely small steps. And so how did I reconcile those two? Well, then I realized, okay, what was happening, it seemed, was that there were people who had big, hairy, audacious goals that came from Jim Collins. That's his sort of framework. I like to add in another A, big, hairy, audacious, authentic goals. And so they would have these big goals, like Sandy Zimmerman. She said, I want to be on American Ninja Warrior. I'm a PE teacher in the Midwest. I have no experience with parkour. I know I'm physically fit, but I want to be on that show. I see people on that show. I want to do what they're doing. So that's a big, hairy, audacious goal. And then at the same time, I would hear, well, to get there, I also had to just swing on the salmon ladder for 7 weeks in a row. I couldn't even move my arms up to the next rung.
And he's up. Go! Super salmon ladder. Like there's a kitty cat at the top. Cook it.
I just swung there until I got the courage to move up to the next rung. And so I think what I finally realized was that you can have a big, hairy, audacious, authentic goal. And a lot of people actually were doing it in the present tense, which I found interesting. So instead of saying, I want to be on American Ninja Warrior, my interviewees were saying things to me like, I am cast for American Ninja Warrior, or I'm going on American Ninja Warrior. They started to say their goals in the present tense, which I found really interesting to me, and also concurrent with some books out there, like Professor Benjamin Hardy, who talks about your future self. And then I would also hear, my next step on my journey is the smallest, teeniest thing, like buying a better pair of sneakers. But I also knew from goal setting that small steps matter. I had read many different frameworks for goal setting. One of my favorite was the SMART goal framework, which is that goals have to be specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-based. And so how do you reconcile, or do you think one is more important than the other? Or do you think you need big, hairy, audacious, authentic goals and the understanding that the very, very small steps of goal setting also need to be there as well?
It's interesting because we need both. And you can think of that big, hairy, audacious, authentic goal like your North Star. What's going to guide you forward? What's that intention that you're setting for yourself? It's incredibly value-based, and that's why that second A for authentic, right? It's your driver. It's what gets you up in the morning. It's your why. And when we have that North Star to guide us, it gives our life meaning and purpose and helps us through the drudgery. The drudgery is part two, which is the small step goals. They're not sexy. They're not glamorous, but you need to do step by step. And you need both because you need that vision and dream to keep you going when things get difficult, but you need a plan to get there. The other thing that I think is fascinating is even though we begin with the end in mind, like the example that you gave about the parkour championship, we may begin with the end in mind because it's incredibly motivating and it's a driving force. But often, even those small steps, just incorporating a little bit of that into our daily life might be enough to fuel us and make us feel a sense of fulfillment, help us feel satiated. So that North Star or that big, hairy goal is a driver, a marker, and a way for you to be guided forward. It might not eventually be your destination, and that's okay. The fact is that you're on the journey, and that first step and second step and third step of the journey is what matters. And I think that's so important because people get so hung up on that big, hairy, audacious, authentic goal because they want to set something that's within limits and they second guess what that goal should be. And is it too small or it's too big? But the bigger, the better. It has more force and more power to drive you.
The reason I want to bring that up is because I don't want people to feel blindsided if they don't meet that goal. Because often what happens is when you start that journey, right? Like that first step is the most difficult. We know that with Newtonian physics. It takes more energy to get something in motion, but once something is motion, it takes less energy to keep it in motion. So we have to take that first step and get our bodies in motion. And that often is enough to feel that sense of fulfillment.
I think that's so important because that goes back to what Ben said about not dying on level one, whether it's in, again, it's in the game of life or actual life. Because it doesn't necessarily mean that your level 1,000 was the one you thought it was going to be, as you said, Aditi, that can change. But having that North Star and continuing to play, it doesn't mean it'll be easy, but it does mean that leveling up is a good thing. It's a good thing to have a plan because it feels hard and it feels strange to think you're going to be the one doing it. Because sometimes, like you said, with Newtonian physics, it's easier for me to stay at rest and let the person next door do it. Let them be the president of the United States. But when it's you and you start realizing, wow, I can do this.
There's this book, The Great Work of Your Life, and it talks about how we can find that sense of meaning and purpose, how we can find that North Star. What's interesting is that many people are just adjacent to their big dream or big vision. It's not a 180 turn that we have to make. Often it's like a 5 or 10 degree turn or pivot or tilt. So for example, in the case of Sandy Zimmerman, she wanted to be a parkour star. She was already a PE teacher and physically fit. So she was already embodying a lot of the traits that she would need to then meet her big, hairy, audacious, authentic goal. So in many ways, when we have that aha moment, that idea or inspiration, the spark to really do something big, we already have all of the raw materials within us to make it happen. It's just a matter of aligning those, maybe refining and honing certain skills. You know, one of my favorite expressions by, I believe, a Japanese empress who was profiled in Vogue magazine, believe it or not, she talked about how she had many different lives before she became empress. And she just said a very simple statement, nothing in life is ever wasted. That resonated with me so deeply because that was the message I needed to hear at the time. And for all of our listeners, you may be on a certain path, you may want to go somewhere else, but nothing in your life has been wasted. Every opportunity, struggle, strength, and achievement that you've already had can be fuel and fire for your next journey.
We're so excited to talk about all of these topics with today's guest, Robin Arzón. Robin is the New York Times bestselling author of Shut Up and Run and Strong Mama. She's also the vice president of fitness programming and head instructor at Peloton. Robin started her career actually as a lawyer. She's also a recovering lawyer. And she discovered her passion for athletics and so much more. Robin is a consummate goal setter. She's our inspiration today for setting goals, meeting goals, and surpassing goals. We cannot wait for her to share her story with all of you.
Get emotional with me, Riley Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Riley Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go, right? There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. On NPR's new podcast, Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's part existential deep dive and part game show. I ask actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to ask some of life's biggest questions. Listen to NPR's Wildcard on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout. And woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're so excited for our guest, Robin Arzon, to be joining us. Robin is the VP of Fitness Programming and Head Instructor at Peloton. She's also a New York Times bestselling author. Hi, Robin.
Hi, Aditi. Hi, Eve. Thank you for having me today.
So we have lots of different goal setting questions. So I think maybe we'll just start with, tell us, what do you think about goal setting? Do you think of them as your big, hairy, audacious goals? Do you think of them as small steps?
I love goals. I mean, I see goals as mini finish lines. As someone who didn't work out as a kid, the fact that I live in a sports analogy is absurd to me. Like, that's absurd. But I absolutely adore goals. I believe that we can have self-generated momentum. And there are lots of tools that get us unstuck and out of inertia. For me, movement is not only a health practice, but it is a creative practice. I actually believe that I paint in sweat. And so my goals, I get just as excited about the granular goals as I do about the big ones. And I pretty much live in hyperbole. Like, in my head, it's like, you are the baddest bee on the planet. Like, I am constantly bigging myself up, but I also am in love with the process. And I think this is where people get a little bit misaligned with the spirit of goal setting when they don't fall in love with the process and the boring stuff and the things that don't feel exciting, that don't feel, you know, that we'll be applauded on social media or get that serotonin response when we get the accolade. So there are many finish lines for me. And whether it's something iterative, like putting a little bit of heavier weight on the barbell, or whether it's major, you know, betting on myself and submitting a book proposal or something like that.
Well, can we start back from the beginning? So one of the biggest goals that people would see from the outside is that you had a complete and total, well, not complete, I mean, you're using your legal skills every day, but you had a very big pivot. And can you just tell us a little bit about that time in your life? Because I'm assuming that some of the things were probably scary and hard and boring, but also very exciting as you start building a new, this new life you're now inspiring us all to live.
We stan a lawyer pivot, don't we, Eve? Yes. Yeah, reformed lawyers over here. Yeah, I do use my law degree every day. I don't regret a moment of any of it. Yeah, I practiced for almost eight years as a corporate litigator in New York City. And I was in the grind. I was in the hustle 80 hours a week. And I actually didn't hate it. My story arc is not hated my life, created a better one. It was thought my life was just okay, realized that malaise and mediocrity are not the standard by which I do anything. So how could I be spending the majority of my life doing that? Then the pivot. But the pivot was a slow burn. It was a two-year process. And I set a calendar appointment for 10 minutes a day, because we're the first person to tell ourselves that we don't have the time. And I love your philosophy that time is diamonds, because it's a non-renewable resource that we're never going to get back. But at the time, I was telling myself, girl, you don't have time to figure out a new life. Like, you're just trying to get these billables. Like, you're just trying to pay your rent. Like, it was, you know, the corporate hustle can be mm-hmm. is very real. And the stories we tell ourselves within that paradigm feel like we're never going to escape. Like, it really is a super big, like, Rapunzel moment. So I started telling myself a different story, but the storytelling was very small, and it was in 10-minute bite-sized chunks. And I set a recurring calendar appointment Monday through Friday, and it was block time that my EA just didn't even know what I was doing. But eventually I told folks that I was meditating, which some days may have been kind of true, but I was like, what's something that they won't touch because they don't know anything about? So I was like, that's my meditation. So anyway, that was the way that was unicorn time. I carved out unicorn space. I didn't call it that, of course, because we hadn't met yet. But in the beginning, it was like, I set a timer and just write pen to paper, like something. Well, how do you want to feel in your new life? Like, who can you contact? Like, what can you Google? Like, it was really simplistic. There wasn't a manual. I just allowed myself, you know, what ultimately became hours of time cumulatively to dream. And then I put those dreams into plans.
So you probably were an incredible corporate litigator. And now you are this, you know, larger than life Peloton ambassador and a wife and a mom. And Eve hates the word balance. And it always makes me laugh because she hates that word. And I use it pretty often in my daily life, right? Work-life balance and professional-personal balance. I would love to know what you think of that word, because when I look at you, you have mastered that thing.
I will have to remember this conversation on the many, many moments when I do not feel like I'm good at anything. I agree. I bristle at the word balance. I instead believe that I have priorities, and I'm either in alignment with those priorities or I'm not. I have a very short list of things, actually, which you listed, family, business priorities, friendships, and that's kind of like everything else just falls. So I don't believe in balance, but I live like unapologetically in alignment with my priorities. And sometimes my priorities shift and I choose my primary identity in any given moment. Sometimes I'm an executive, sometimes I'm an entrepreneur. Of course, on the back, like I'm always a mom, I'm always a wife. I don't relinquish those parts of myself, but I give myself freedom to say, this is just gonna be put here for the next hour, 90 minutes, 2 days, whatever. And I'm gonna allow this other part of my identity to be the tip of the spear. And that has given me so much freedom to then use a work back approach. It's like, okay, if these are my values, then how do I fill my days? And I center my values in how I fill my days. And so, yes, I feel fulfilled. I do feel like I have appropriate balance by my own definition of success. But it does require enough critical thinking for folks to use that in their own lives. The blueprint only works if you listen to yourself long enough to know what the priorities are, and then continue to listen to yourself to know if you are in alignment or not. And when I'm not in alignment, that's when I get that sticky feeling in my gut and I start to resent. If I start to resent appointments, if I start to resent these things that I used to love, I know, something's gotten askew.
What I love about that, yes, I was going to say, is balance is not a terrible word in and of itself, but I think the problem is so many people think of it as an input. And mm-hmm. what Robin taught me is that it's an output. the same way that happiness is an output, the same way that jealousy is an output, that when you're doing something, those feelings, you pay attention to them. Or again, when you do other things, like when you're in alignment with your priorities, balance does follow, or a version of being able to feel really good in your decision-making follows because you've set in motion the way you make decisions through your values-based lens, which is something that I've always really admired about you, Robin. And also, I think that the beauty of you using a values-based lens to how you live your life is that it doesn't hurt your life. So many people think, well, you know, what if I really think about my own values, maybe they're not what society wants from me. But look at what society's given you back. I mean, they see your authenticity. They see you living by your values. And then people want to follow your lead, which I think is really beautiful. So let's talk a little bit about those small steps. One of my favorite small steps that you took was cold calling the CEO or the owner of Peloton way back when, before people knew it was a household name. So can you tell us a little bit about that space in your life? How did you have the courage to do that? What made you even think about this particular company? Like, I always think about that when I'm going to do something hard. I'm like, well, if Robin can cold call Peloton, like I can talk to my editor about a third book. So you always, you give me a lot of inspiration.
Oh, wow. Well, thanks. Thank you for that. And yes, third book, we're here for it. So it started with a vision board. I had already left my law firm and I was working on my book. I was coaching runners. And I thought, gosh, what is my next step? Like, there's not many checks coming in. I don't know what is my next step. And I've never gone wrong when I bet on myself. And the vision board had a quadrant that was about business and business partnerships. And that's not something I had really contemplated. I understood business as like, these business folks are my clients. And I thought, oh, wait, I have to smash all the paradigms. Like, I am here on this earth to smash the paradigms. And so I thought, what if there's a new construct of ways that I can partner being myself? And I am the brand partnering with the brand. I truly, influencer marketing was like just bubbling up at this time. So for me then, it was a very revolutionary concept. Like, I'm the product. And then I read a blurb about Peloton in Fast Company. I read the then CEO, John Foley, co-founder. And it crystallized for me, not because I was super techie and I knew all this stuff about tech. It was because I had put on my vision board that I wanted to work for a modern, disruptive company that is going to storytell on a global scale. In my mind, it was going to be a media company or something. I didn't realize that this was going to be the synergy that I was in fact looking for. And so I sent a cold email to the info at that I found on Google. There were only like 20 employees at the time of the company. And literally I emailed on a Monday. I had an audition on a Wednesday and I had a contract the following week.
Wow.
You use this word to describe yourself, unapologetic. And I can't think of a better word to describe you as a person. How can we get there? How can we get that Robin Arzon juju?
Little by little amounts to a lot, right? Using your voice even when it shakes. It's wearing the thing that makes you feel good. It's, I mean, this is a big one, but it's like knowing your worth and adding tax. It's asking for the raise. It's creating a boundary around your time. It's taking the long way home because you feel like it. It's those little moments when we feel like we're flexing, when we feel like we're being bold. But really, that's just developing that willpower muscle. It's developing that confidence muscle. And I also do believe that a lot of my confidence stems from the physical embodiment of living in this skin. And I'm competitive with myself, right? And that confidence is a side effect of my hustle. And now I'm in a different chapter where I also recognize that slowing down is a strength. You know, postpartum, I had to slow down and I had to discover new parts of my identity and new parts of my self-worth. And that's been really refreshing and beautiful. And so now sometimes my internal flex is, you know, lifting the equivalent of my body weight over my head, you know, on a barbell. And then sometimes the subtle flex is like, I'm gonna sit here and I'm doing absolutely nothing and I don't have to explain it to any of y'all. And so I guess the advice, you know, is think about the small moments where you feel like you're betting on yourself. I actually envision like Robin in 2025, Robin in 2020, in 2030, looking back and be like, yes, girl, that was the whisper that you needed to turn into a roar. And so it's like, how can we carve out those little moments where we can actually listen to ourselves and we can champion ourselves in those small ways? So whether it's scheduling the workout, whether it's taking the time, 15 minutes to make the painting, to Google, to pick out colors, pick out the paint, do the 10-minute thing where you're betting on yourself, and then we get used to betting on ourselves. And, you know, I would say, especially for caregivers out there, we have to model this behavior. We have to. Nobody who is living, you know, in our ecosystems should have to wait 20, 30, 50, 60 years to realize a dream. It's like we have the ability to do that now. So let's start practicing on ourselves and modeling it, not only for the little ones, but the adults in our lives too. Like, you never know who is going to be inspired by your story. You could be someone's survival guide one day.
Strong Mama. So let's talk about that as a survival guide. It's a really beautiful book. It's a new children's book that you just put out into the world. That is a survival guide in that it's an ability to connect with the next generation. And I want you to tell people about what inspired you to write a children's book in addition to all the other things you're doing, amazing things you're doing. But I will say, I went through my library of children's books and I was trying to find other children's books that actually focused on the caregiver, the parent, as opposed to centering the child as the be-all, end-all. And there really aren't very many. And so that's what I love so much. It doesn't say strong child, and I'm going to help you be that. It says strong mama, and that's intentional. So can you talk a little bit about this survival guide for the next generation?
Yeah. So strong mama, really, the genesis of it was, a conversation I was having with myself, and it was, gosh, like, how do you remember the strength of this moment when you are creating life? And I thought, you know, baby Athena in my belly was my workout partner. And we were doing these things together. And I thought, how are you going to teach them about these critical self-care moments, that movement is medicine and self-care isn't selfish? What teachable thing, like, how are you going to teach this value? Of course, by example. But then I envisioned myself sitting next to my kid and being like, this is why mommy went on a 2-hour run over the weekend. It's because I must take care of myself in order to take care of you. And the beauty of having the caregiver be the center of that story is that I think it enables all of us to have these conversations about these concepts with kids, so then they can realize when they should also be utilizing the same toolkit of movement as medicine and self-care as something that should be really revered and respected.
Well, then if we can move on to this idea of practical steps for people who are just getting started, who are just now realizing they can't do this anymore, that burnout has reached an all-time high for them. They can't live this way anymore. What would you say is a good place to start?
I guess it's like a four-pronged approach. A movement practice is crucial. Like, I think a movement practice physically metabolizes, you know, not, I don't mean calories, I mean like emotions. Like, you know, when there's just stress and stuff and gunk and news feeds, we have to be able to move. So in any way that you can move, that feels good to move, develop a movement practice, even if it's 10 minutes a day. And then that goes to the second piece of my four-pronged approach, which is that I have a mantra mirror moment. Like, I have like a moment where I look myself in the eyes in the mirror and I bang on my chest and I just talk to myself. And at first it was really weird, but I developed this as preparing for race day. And I realized that in the race corrals, I would get so nervous because, you know, there's just this frenetic energy, you know, I needed like a positive trigger. And for that like banging on my chest, like I still do that before almost every Peloton class, actually. So I would say a self-talk moment, whether that's more contemplative and you consider that more of a meditation moment. But I actually think like looking yourself in the eye in the mirror is powerful as hell. So let's dial into our self-talk and maybe develop some positive triggers around that conversation, because it's the most important conversation we're going to have. I guess then the last two are pretty straightforward. It's owning your no to protect your yes. It's actually practicing the full sentence that is N-O, no, without explanation, without apology. That's it. It's a no. No. And we're just going to make waves and they're just going to have to learn how to swim. Like, I just cannot. It's a no. And then the fourth is an interesting, I guess, compliment to that is I really try to put a gratitude lens on a lot of what I do. I ask myself often, what is it that you used to wish for, pray for, hustle for, vision board for that you have right now that might even annoy you? You know, I'm sitting in my beautiful home and then something, then the sink breaks and I'm like, ah, and it's like, girl, you got a dishwasher, honey. Like, you live in New York. You better calm it all the way down, you know? So I try to put that gratitude lens often. We are on to the next thing. We're on to the next finish line. We're on to the next victory. I mean, this whole thing's about goal setting, right? It's like, goals are incredible. But we have to take time to celebrate the tiny victories. And I do try to have that gratitude moment. Sometimes it's in a journal. I love journaling. But oftentimes it is just like that check, like, you need to check yourself because somebody would take your problems and call them blessings right now.
But what is so important about what you're saying, because I do think that the idea of goal setting is so forward thinking, possibly, right? That I don't want people to lose sight of the fact that we're not saying you always have to be moving forward. You always have to have something new. You always have to necessarily be productive in the same way that maybe a capitalist patriarchy would think of you as productive. But I do think it's really interesting that part of goal setting, even in your framework about where to start, is looking back at things that you have accomplished. And can you talk a little bit about that? What do you look back on and you say, I can't believe I did that?
That's part of my favorite. So I call it creating a mental movie reel. You know how like movies have like sizzle reels, right? It'll be like 30 seconds of like the most amazing clips of the next superhero movie. And I thought, when I was preparing for my first ultramarathon, I thought, oh, but like, I'm living all that. Like, I'm living that. So why shouldn't we create our own superhero movie reels? And it could be the small moments where you flex, the small moments where you bet on yourself, whether it is like an actual workout or whether it's, you know, speaking up in the meeting, whether it's not apologizing for taking a day off, whether it's asking your partner, collaborator, whoever it is, to be like, yeah, you can take this one today, and asking for what you need. The world needs us to tell our stories. We need us to tell our stories. And I think in looking back, you realize that you've survived all of it. You survived 100% of your worst days. And despite it all, you're still here, but now you have that story to tell. Like, what was it all worth if you can't now tell yourself the story that you are the hero in it? Take it with you. So, you know, a practical application of that is picking 3, 4, 5 of those wins and actually creating a visualization practice around it. Like, I have a visualization of practice around my training wins leading up to race day. And then I also have some as it relates to business, some as it relates to personal relationships, just to conjure and remind myself of that I am already, listen, I'm already funding the script. I'm already living it. Like, I might as well write something that I want to watch.
So good. I'm like, what would be in my reel?
To me, when I hear you with all of these tips and tricks and these daily strategies, there is so much good science behind every single thing that you are doing for yourself, suggesting to others. And in my mind, you have cracked the code for living a more authentic life, a life that's really centered on longevity, right? For people who are earlier on in their journey to really having a life of impact that they want, what can people do early on in when they get those whispers, like you say? How can they chase that to make it into our roar so that they can act and live their truest, most authentic self?
One of my most profound and most recent mantras was postpartum consistency over intensity. Because I am so apt to go hard and intense and like, I will be there forever. I will be in the dirt, just like grinding. But that's not always, certainly not the spirit of what we're trying to build, right? Like, that's not the energy that we need to put into every single thing. And I certainly couldn't do it physically. You know, I obviously couldn't do that postpartum. So consistency over intensity became a really important, profound mantra for me. And I would say that that is really applicable to the beginning of any journey. And what small iterative steps, I'm talking like, be the person who did 5 minutes a day this week. Like, that actually chemically changes not only like you on a cellular level, but then you start telling the story to yourself that I am the person that does this X
every
amount
day.
Of time.
Yes, every day.
Every day.
I do this.
Like, yes. I am this person. right? And
I hide it behind pretending it's meditation in my office, but exactly. It doesn't matter.
Consistency over intensity, because we do see a lot of other people's highlight reels. We do see a lot of sizzle reels. And we're under this impression that we need to go all in, and it's hard in the paint, and it's throwing the books off the desk and quitting the job. It's not that sweeping. Aim for something that you can do consistently that is moving the needle slightly closer to the person you want to be and how you want to feel when you get there.
So funny you just said that, because I screenshot this woman who said this morning, I'm just showing you this thing because it just reminded me of that. She said, "Hi Eve, I want to share how meaningful Unicorn Space has been for me. I have a 2-year-old and a 4-month-old. My husband is a basketball coach and I've been doing most of the parenting and housekeeping. I was going through one of the worst depressive episodes I've had. I started to listen to Unicorn Space and I discovered a heels dance class." I didn't even know what that was, actually. I have a bone spur and like a bunion, so I couldn't do that from dance. But I'm assuming that's dancing in heels. "It's become my Unicorn Space and I love how empowered and femme I feel there. I don't think I would have ever considered going." So, I mean, that's not that transformative, but it sounds like it changed her whole life, right? She just signed up for one heels dance class, right? You may just be on a ride with you and that starts to change things, but it's not the heels dance class. So I was wondering, what do you see the people that you coach or that are in your audience, like those types of people who say, "I did this, I signed up for the heels dance class and it's changed my life." What is that? Is it confidence that they get? Is it introspection? What do you think is happening to them in that process on a cellular level? Or what do you see?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's like the physiological chemical stuff that happens with movement. But the crux of it for me is we put ourselves in a scenario where we can answer the question, "Why not me?" Whether it's a curiosity of what, like, can I lift my leg a little higher in this dance move? Can I master this step? Can I pick up this weight? Can I run this distance? Can I meet a friend on the leaderboard? You know, it's not always based on the metrics and all the data points. Sometimes it's based on the feeling and the community and the, who am I in this? And it is that constant questioning of identity, but we have all these little opportunities through movement that really are rituals. I mean, this is an age-old practice where we are anchoring ourselves to community and meaning and answering the question, why not me? So it's like, why not me to sign up for the heels dance class? Why not me to go to the triathlon training? Put in a 10-minute core class on Peloton. You are a different person on the other side. And the deep, deep knowing, like the soul that chose your body, knows that you did something to create self-generated momentum. And that is life-changing.
Why not me? Thank you. You are about to go teach, so we're gonna let you go. But you're the best.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, right. Which is different than empathy, yeah. Right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go, right? There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. On NPR's new podcast, Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's part existential deep dive and part game show. I ask actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to ask some of life's biggest questions. Listen to NPR's Wildcard on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, it's me, Eve. I wrote Find Your Unicorn Space as a permission slip for you to reconnect and discover that thing that makes you come alive. Without the guilt, without the excuses. Especially in our all-too-busy world, making time for ourselves is essential work. It improves our health, our relationships, and it just might be the antidote to burnout. Join me on a journey to find your unicorn space. Visit unicornspace.com. For today's Time Out, we're going to walk you through a four-step method for goal setting. One, you're going to set your big, hairy, audacious, authentic goal. Write one down. We don't care what it is, whether you think you will ever achieve it, just the first one you can think of, write it down. That's step one. Write down a big, hairy, audacious, authentic goal. Step two is gut checking to make sure that it's actually authentic. How do we do that? Well, when you have a big, hairy, audacious, authentic goal, that means the goal aligns with your value system. So please visit page 144 of Find Your Unicorn Space or go to www.fairplaylife.com where you can find a list of values. Circle your top three values. Look at your big, hairy, audacious, authentic goal and make sure that it's in alignment with those values. So for me, when I decided to devote myself to women's economic security for the rest of my life, I went and understood that that goal did align very deeply with the values that I hold: community, fairness, and justice. Step three, you're going to start where you are, and Aditi will tell you what that means.
Now that you've identified your big, hairy, audacious, authentic goal and double-checked to make sure that it's authentic and in line with your values, then take a life inventory. What raw materials do you already have to get there? What life experiences have you had? What resources do you have to put into it? And then the last step, what small incremental change can you make to bring your big, hairy, audacious, authentic goal to life? And so we want to think of that small, bite-sized nugget as your SMART goal: specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-based. For Robin, it was small in time, 10-minute increments that she would put in her calendar so she could figure out how she could fulfill her dreams and her audacious, authentic goal.
And we know all of this can feel overwhelming, scary, difficult. And so next week is about facing your fears. If this exercise feels scary to you or uncomfortable, maybe table it and come back to it after you listen to the next episode. Thank you for listening to Time Out, a production of iHeart Podcasts and Hello Sunshine. I'm Eve Rodsky, author of the New York Times bestseller Fair Play and Find Your Unicorn Space. Follow me on social media at Eve Rodsky and learn more about our work at Fair Play Life.
And I'm Dr. Aditi Narukar, a Harvard physician with a specialty in stress, resilience, burnout, and mental health. Follow me on social media at Dr. Aditi Narukar and find out more about my work at draditi.com. That's draditi.com.
Our Hello Sunshine team is Amanda Farrand, Erin Stover, and Jennifer Yonker. Our iHeart Media team is Ali Perry, Jennifer Bassett, and Jessica Kreinschich. We hope you all love taking a much-needed time out with us today. Listen and subscribe to Time Out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite shows.
Hey, I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go, right? There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. On NPR's new podcast, Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's part existential deep dive and part game show. I ask actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to ask some of life's biggest questions. Listen to NPR's Wildcard on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast, and I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.